baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and you fill in the blank. Summer and Chevy go together like road trips and sunshine. Check out the full line of Chevy SUVs and trucks at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
Another sports betting scandal this past week, and the Supreme Court ruled on transgender athletes in sports. My next guest, Lester Munson, local legend, a friend of the show, is always willing to break down these issues for us. He's been a lawyer for 57 years, graduate of the University of Chicago Law School, one of the most esteemed sports journalists whose work about how America understands money, celebrity violence, sex, drugs, race, and gender, and how people fall from grace in the sports community. He was a Sports Illustrated writer and joined ESPN for 16 years. Lester Munson, again, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate the opportunity, Karen. It's good to be with you.
So let's talk about these gambling disorders. You know, they've risen a lot since 2018. Can you just briefly tell our listeners what happened in 2018 that increased gambling and sports gambling in our country?
In 2018, the United States Supreme Court made a decision that each of the 50 states could decide whether it wanted to legalize sports gambling. As the result of that decision, more than 30 states have decided to make sports gambling legal, and it now comes in the form of online betting. Instead of bookies hiding in the back of some store someplace, you now can make all your telephone is all you need to make a bet on sports. And this whole thing has exploded in an exponential way, billions of dollars being wagered by many, many people, primarily young men.
You know, we've seen scandals all over, and you've been here to talk about it. We had Major League Baseball, college football, and basketball in the NBA, and this latest one involves Malik Beasley, a former NBA player, in an indictment that came down in New York. You know, we've known that there's been sports betting. We had Pete Rose 40 years ago, and which resulted in a lifetime ban, but Are we just seeing more of these now, or is it that they're being detected more? And is the proliferation of sports betting resulting in these types of indictments?
I think the proliferation of sports betting is producing this activity. There are more and more people who are able to bet. It is so easy to make bets that somebody like Malik Beasley, all he has to do is dig out his phone, punch a couple of buttons, and he has made a wager. That's vastly different from the way Pete Rose was betting with bookies who were illegal, who were hiding around all over the place, and each bet involved a number of phone calls, deposits of money, actual cash money changing hands. It is so simple now that more and more people are doing it, and many professional athletes are tempted to participate in this, particularly any athlete who has worked himself into any level of debt. They are the ones who are vulnerable.
And, you know, there's some idea here, these kinds of things, that these are, you know, players who maybe aren't making the huge, big money that the Michael Jordans made, and that they're open and for this kind of corruption, and that there are people who are predators out there who are preying on them, and these are kids who are in effect who are kind of just caught up in this world, kind of not against their will, but maybe due to some gambling addictions. How much blame do we give to the athletes versus the people on the outside who may be the ones stoking the fire here?
Well, I think we can blame both of them, Karen. In the case of Malik Beasley, this is a guy who has been playing professional basketball at a very high level for 9 years. This guy is a good player. He is not somebody who just came into the league and suddenly found himself with a pocket full of money. In fact, he was just about to sign a contract for $42 million, which would have made him a wealthy man. It would have been generational wealth for his family. And then he got caught helping some gamblers because he himself had fallen into debt because of his gambling. He had a serious gambling problem. We didn't know about it until this came along. And now he is in deep trouble. He will be banned from basketball for life. So he has done something to himself that probably will cost him more than $40 million.
You know, I have dealt with gambling addictions in my practice. It is a real thing. If anyone thinks it is not a real thing, it is, and it can be as deadly and suicidal and traumatizing to families and to people for generations. And it's real. Even if, you know, you don't care about betting, there are people who get up in the morning and that's all they do, and they steal from their job in order to fund their addiction, and they'll steal from their grandmother to fund it. So what do we do with these athletes? What would you say if you ruled the world in the sports arena here? How would you get these athletes to understand that they can't go there, that if they do go there, they need to get help immediately? What would be the remedy? Because not only is it hurting them, it's harming the entire sport, and I will say sports.
We are at an inflection point, as you suggest. Something has to be done. I would suggest two things. A, punish Beasley, make him an example, so that the rest of the players in the NBA will understand that this is not acceptable. Beasley is likely to do some penitentiary time as a result of this, but even more important, he will be banned for life from a sport that he has devoted his life to. The other thing to do would be to continue to try to educate the younger players. Basketball players come into the league at age 19 and 20. The union does a good job of trying to prepare them for the temptations and the difficulties of their life in professional basketball, but that curriculum that the union offers must have more emphasis on the temptations of gambling, the problems of gambling, and what gambling can do to somebody.
And
more people must know that it is a disease, it is a situation in which the gambler gets into a hole, and then he gambles even more trying to get out of the hole. It's a very perverse diagnosis.
Yeah, and then they gamble with their family's money to pay it back.
Exactly.
And the gambling at their workplaces, and it's devastating. I guess this is just a comment, but it seems to me that, you know, you have these sports leagues that are coming down really hard on these players, as well they should. There's a lot of money at stake in the integrity of sports. But they're also being sponsored by all of these, sports books. I mean, all you have to do is listen to, some radio station that broadcasts sports, and they're all the ads are for sports books. Is there something hypocritical about that to you?
Absolutely correct. Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, where Beasley played, he was the first of the major sports figures to decide that gambling should be a part of our sports life here in the United States. It was he who opened the door for all of the other professional sports. Now he has the Beasley situation. He has some other players who are also in trouble. And he's going to have to decide what to do. I think the governing bodies of sports are beginning to realize that wide-open sports gambling is unacceptable, and they're going to have to find ways to cut it down to size, to eliminate some of these temptations, and to put more severe regulation on their players to make sure they do not work themselves into the kind of hole that Beasley was when he resorted to this stuff.
Lester, can you tell us what the issue was before the court that resulted in the opinion that was issued this past week?
The issue before the court, Karen, was whether a trans woman can compete against other women in various sports events. This problem all began when a swimmer by the name of Leah Thomas, a trans woman, 6 feet 4, long arms, big shoulders. When this woman, a trans, won an NCAA swimming event, a 500-meter freestyle. She beat her competitors by the length of the 50-meter pool. It was a bizarre outcome. And ever since then, there has been a kind of a movement, if you will, among states to ban trans women from competing in women's sports. And this, these bans made it all the way up to the Supreme Court, involving the states of Idaho and West Virginia. And the court, in a 6-3 opinion, ruled that each state can decide whether it will allow trans women to compete in women's sports. And at the moment, there are 27 states who have banned trans women from competing against other women. And there are two more, Colorado and Washington, who have the issue on the ballot this coming November. So there's a serious trend to ban trans women from competitive sports. And this is part of that trend.
So this opinion does not strike. If there is a law, let's say there's a law in California that says that trans women can, in fact, participate in sports, that would be okay. The court is not saying that you can't have trans in sports, but a ban is going to be upheld. Is that fair to say?
That's exactly the case. Absolutely. Like here in Illinois, for example, there is no ban on trans women, so they can compete in any sport they want to. In Illinois, if they can get a team and a school and a group of teams to participate with them.
You know, and again, I don't want to get too legal here because I don't want to get caught in the weeds. But, you know, the Supreme Court doesn't listen to argument and look at the briefs and just say, hey, we don't like transgenders in sports. We're going to strike this down. There's usually a legal basis. And can you tell us maybe technically a little bit what the court's basis was for upholding the bans at issue here?
The basis for this decision is a recognition by six justices of the Supreme Court that a trans woman has an advantage over the other women in any competition. Brett Kavanaugh, who is probably the most serious sports fan among the nine judges, he coaches women's basketball teams as part of his life. He used the phrase, the hard reality of an advantage that a trans woman has. The all six of these judges agreed that a woman who started out in life as a man is going to have an advantage over the competition, and they ruled that that was unfair and denied the women who were already competing equal protection of the law. So they upheld the ban in this case of Idaho and West Virginia.
And I skimmed the opinion. I didn't read it probably as carefully as you did, but I did understand that there was an analysis of Title IX, which of course is the law that prohibits discrimination between men and women in college sports, say. And so, you know, the idea is that Title IX does segregate teams by gender, right? So there can be men's sports and there can be women's sports. You can separate those for the very reasons you just talked about, because men have a distinct advantage in their musculature and their height and all of those things. So that the idea is that if you're going to keep that gender distinction for purposes of transgenders, that would be consistent with Title IX.
That was part of the case, although the six of them did not share the same idea on Title IX. But Title IX was a revolution in the world of sports. It was passed under the Nixon administration, and it's been the law ever since. And it is what first produced the idea of equality between men and women in opportunities in sports. And then this came along as a way of tampering with that. And I think the six who voted to allow states to ban trans women. They had Title IX as part of their reasoning, but it was not a significant part.
And again, I don't know what you think about this because your lane is sports, but you know, there have been all kinds of cases that have been decided and some that are going to be decided on transgender issues of gender affirming care. Do adults get it? Do minors get it? Can you ban adults from getting it? Can you ban insurance companies from covering it? I mean, those are all cases that, you know, have been decided, will be decided. This doesn't really have any just general precedent setting in the for those cases, does it? Do you see that? It's not basically saying that we're anti-transgender. It's just that in sports, it's clear that if you're a man, transition to a woman, you're going to have an unfair competition advantage.
The Supreme Court has ruled against trans people six times in the last 13 years. So this does fit in with that general trend. In addition to being a legal issue, it's become a political issue because President Trump has campaigned on this issue with some effect. And so as long as he is going to continue to attack the issue, it's going to be something that we're going to hear more and more about. You can say, some people would say, well, wait a minute, there's a tiny fragment of the population is in the trans community. Why should we bother? Well, we have to pay attention to this. We are a country that protects all people. Everybody has to have an equal opportunity. So these cases present dilemmas that are going to continue to be presented to the court system. Right now, the trend is absolutely against the trans community, and I do not see that changing anytime soon.
I agree. And for, you know, I mean, I really hate to get political here because it's, you know, we're a legal show. So I try to keep in that lane, but it does hurt the cause, let's say, to, you know, in some ways, I think to say that, you know, a 6'4" swimmer, you know, who wins by a 50 yard, you know, swimming pool, that's a cause that's going to help out the transgender community. It's just not. So, but it is interesting and it's going to be even more interesting to see some of the cases coming down, this next term and the term after. I want to circle back, Lester, to the sports gambling. I've got a bunch of texters who are questioning some of the things we're talking about. You know, one of the things that that I wanted to address was the prop betting. Can you explain what that is to listeners?
A prop bet is something in which the bettor is gambling on how many rebounds a particular player will get, how many points a player will score. Instead of betting on who's going to win and who's going to lose, these are tiny individual statistics. And the problem with prop bets, it's obvious, is that if somebody is betting, in the case of Malik Beasley, on how many rebounds he's going to have, he himself can control that and help the bettor. And that's exactly what happened in his case. So there is now a body of thought indicating we should somehow eliminate prop bets because it's prop bets that are causing the problems that are corrupting the integrity of our sports. So proposition bets seem to be a problem. Only now, finally, after two or three years, is the sports industry beginning to recognize the nature of that problem. And maybe we will see some relief there. There may be attempts to eliminate those kind of bets from the online betting that is now growing so quickly.
We only have about a minute left, but I was doing a little research on this topic, and I was just really appalled to learn that one in three college athletes has received abusive messages or threats from people who have a betting interest. So now people who are betting on, like you say, rebounds or whatever it is that, you know, not a win or loss of a game, but these how many pitches are going to be thrown in an inning type of thing, are becoming angry and are being aggressive with these players, whether it's online or I'm not sure how it, you know, how these communications are made. What do you make of that, and how what can be done about it?
Well, gamblers who think they have something that will allow them to make some money, when they discover that they have lost more money and they're in a deeper and deeper hole, sometimes they act out, they reach out, and they feel compelled to threaten the person who did not perform the way they were supposed to perform. It must be a frightening thing for these athletes when they start getting these threats. It's easy to find them, college athletes, professional athletes. It's easy to send the threat to them. And it's a very sad commentary on the entire gambling situation that this has now become a part of the life of an elite athlete.
Absolutely. Lester Munson, thank you so much for joining us and breaking all of this down for us. I'm sure you'll be back soon to talk about another sports legal topic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate the chance to talk with you. Thank you.